യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രകരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. So now, in the last few sessions, we were discussing some of the problems that we face in spiritual life, not only in spiritual life, but life in general, and how Patanjali recommends some solutions of this, one of the most important method that he recommends is called Ishvara Pranidhana. It means a kind of an attitude of resignation or self-surrender to God. This is an idea which again is practiced by concentrating on a sacred bird, a mantra, and then contemplating on the essence or the meaning of the mantra, and finally getting the mind completely identified with the essence of the sacred word. Through these methods, we are able to gain concentration of mind and reduce the psychological obstacles like lack of concentration, doubts, wrong ideas, wrong perceptions, sometimes a feeling of depression, lethargy, feeling of heaviness, which are all psychological obstacles in the path of yoga. Now, when we discuss this point, we have to remember that according to Patanjali's system, our entire mental experience is divided into three fundamental categories. One, the experiences that we have to encounter in this world, good and bad experiences, called bhoga, any experience, and then our reactions to those experiences, how we react to those experiences. We react sometimes out of fear. Sometimes we are attracted towards certain experiences. Sometimes we are distracted. We have a strong liking for some experiences, and also sometimes we have a strong dislike. So raga and dvesha. And there are some experiences which we may not like at all, but we may not dislike, but we just avoid. It's called bhaya. So these are the three methods of emotional, volitional, psychological reactions to whatever we experience in this world. Either we like it, or we dislike it, or we avoid it. Now, Patanjali says, there are five important kleshas that we have to encounter in this world. Five important obstructions. We already discussed these points, so I'm not going to deal with them elaborately. Avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhiniveshaha, panchakleshaha. Now, what are the kleshas? That should be understood. Kleshas are nothing but the obstacles created by our reaction to different experiences. Psychological obstacles related to our emotional, volitional, psychological reactions, mental reactions to experiences. So experiences all should be taken as one whole unit, which is called bhoga. Anything which may be good or which may be bad. Anything that nature presents itself before us. And then how we react to those experiences mentally. Mental reaction, of course, may be related to physical reaction also. So in the form of strong liking and strong dislike. And the third one, avoiding. So we avoid certain things, we are drawn towards certain things, and we are totally, we feel totally detached. We feel like moving away from certain things. So towards certain experiences and a tendency to move away from certain experiences that we dislike, and a tendency to avoid, keep away. It's called abhinivesha, a kind of fear. So avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, panchaklesha. So all these reactions take the form of either raga, liking, dvesha, dislike, or fear. And they are all rooted in one common problem, avidya. Avidya here means ignorance. Ignorance is not just absence of knowledge, but it is something opposite to knowledge. So ignorance, you sometimes find a translation, because often when you translate one important technical word from one system of philosophy to a language in which such ideas are somewhat alien, unfamiliar, then often we won't be able to find the exact word which can fully contain the full implications of the technical word. So avidya here means not just the absence of knowledge, but something opposed to knowledge, something different from knowledge. Because normally, when we don't know certain things in the relative world, it is not necessarily a positive, negative factor. It is just a negative factor. You don't know about certain things, but you may not have any idea about it. But in the case of avidya, the word used in Patanjali system and also in the Vedanta system, avidya is a category. It is a cognitive error, mistaking one thing for the other. But it has got a much more fundamental meaning in Vedanta, where it becomes a positive material cause for the appearance of the absolute reality as something other than the absolute reality. The absolute is perceived by mystic to be the relative, and vice versa, the relative is perceived to be the absolute. I shall explain this in course of time. So avidya is a fundamental cause. What is avidya? Avidya is nothing but our misinterpretation, our wrong definition, our wrong understanding of what we are. That's what is avidya. When you think we are just this body, then the most minute physical problem will be devastating, will have a shocking effect. When you think that we are just an intellectual being, then something that is not fully satisfactory to our intellectual taste may be somewhat unacceptable. So, it is, in short, it is nothing but our wrong understanding of what we are, which is, in a way, the source, the mother of all problems. Why do we become unhappy, terribly upset when there is a physical disease? Sometimes we get terribly shocked because we think we are this body. So when something related to this body gets disturbed, gets hurt, we go out of the way to repair it, knowing fully well that if not today, tomorrow, the body will fall sick. It has to vanish. Maybe we may live for 100 years. But then, this is forgotten when we misinterpret what we are. That forgetting mechanism is called Maya in Vedanta. It is a cognitive error in yoga. That's a basic difference. In Vedanta, it is a kind of inexplicable, indescribable error. We can just ask the simple question. We all know that wealth is not eternal. Money is not eternal. And we all know that money and wealth cannot bring eternal peace and contentment. You need not even get good education. Every person with basic minimum intelligence understands this. But then, when we try to acquire wealth, when we become upset when we lose money, this fact is forgotten. Why do we forget this? There is no logical explanation. In fact, in real life, it doesn't happen. Suppose you are doing a work and somebody tells you this is not the way to do that particular work. An instructor or a teacher in the school or college or university or the trainer tells you this is not the way to do it. And maybe tomorrow onwards you won't repeat that mistake. Immaterial life. But in our real life, we know things, we know perfectly well that money, wealth, status, all the material pleasures together can never give us eternal peace and happiness. But then, even if we are always reading books on Vedanta, in real life situations, due to some inexplicable, indescribable power, which is technically called Maya or Avidya in Vedanta, we become forgetful of that. And that's the source of all problems. If you always remember that fact, there's no problem. People can have plenty of health, peace of mind, everything. Because even health is affected by this ignorance, anxiety. All related to one, rooted in one common mistaken identity. That is, we think we are this body or this mind. That is avidya. So it is a cognitive error in yoga, and it is a kind of not only an absence of knowledge, but a positive false projection of the real. You not only forget the reality, but we project a false reality, which is called avarana and vikshepa, concealment and false projection. When you see something for what it is, then you see that there is no false projection. When you see the false projection, then you don't see the object and understand it for what it is. Now, this avidya is being explained here in the fifth sutra of the second chapter. Anitya, asuchi, dukkha, anatmasu, nitya, suchi, sukha, atmakhyatihi, avidya. It's a definition of avidya. Very simple. Mistaking the non-eternal for the eternal. Body is non-eternal. Wealth is non-eternal. Image, status, reputation, all these are non-eternal. They are subject to change. But frequently, we forget the fact that they are non-eternal. And then we project the wrong notion that all these things are eternal. In yoga, it is only a cognitive error. In Vedanta, it is not only a cognitive error, but it is a combination of concealment and a false projection, which is the mother, the source of all problems. So, the non-eternal is mistaken to be the eternal. The body and all that is associated with everything. All fear is related to the body identity. You find everything is related to body fear. When the basic fear of disappearance of this body, the fear of death, is supposed to be the greatest source of fear, and that is the foundation of all other minor fears. We become sick, We become upset, we become anxious, because we feel we will die, which means this body may one day vanish. We know the body has to vanish, but we forget it. But then we become anxious. So it's totally inexplicable. Why and how this happens, Vedanta says, it can never be explained. Sannapya sannapi bhuyatmigano, bhinnapya bhinnapi bhuyatmigano, sangha pyasangapi bhuyatmigano, mahat buddha anirvachaniya rupa. Maya or avidya is explained by Shankaracharya in one of the minor books called Viveka Chudamani. It is neither existence nor non-existence nor a combination of both. So, and it is neither whole nor part nor a combination of both. And it is, in short, totally beyond verbalization. It is beyond definition, beyond description. But when we say it is beyond description, it means it is not a reality. But it is this ignorance, this avidya, is real so long as we are within its realm. The moment we come out of it, we understand it is not real. That is the difference between spiritually enlightened persons and those who are not spiritually enlightened. Those who are not spiritually enlightened may understand it from books, but forget. And because of this forgetfulness, we invite all problems. And those who are spiritually enlightened, they also live in this world. They also drink water, breathe oxygen, eat food. But in the midst of all this, somewhere within the system, they, in a corner of their mind, they keep this fact that all these things are totally non-eternal. They are unreal. They are not real in the true sense of the term. Unreal doesn't mean non-existent. Unreal only means that which is not absolutely real. They are not absolutely unreal, because anything that is absolutely unreal can never be experienced. We can never feel anything that is totally unreal. So what we experience to be the real, but really not the real, is the relative reality. It's a relativity. And the whole universe is a relativity, according to Vedanta. So anitya means non-eternal. So what is avidya? What is ignorance? It is explained here. Mistaking the non-eternal, the non-real, to be the real, the eternal. And asuchi. Asuchi means impure. Well, it is a very unpleasant thing that we don't want to remind ourselves of. That this body, if you... anything that comes after this human body, we will wash our hands if we touch it with our fingers. But then we consider all these things to be very precious, something to be properly safeguarded, something to be covered with costly costumes, everything. But every child of not only a doctor or a physiologist, but every educated person knows this body is just a skin bag, the contents of which are certainly not of a very desirable type. So in a way, these are impure. And we think they are wonderful things. They are pure. So mistaking the impure to be the pure. See, remember, body is not something to negligible or something towards which we should be indifferent. Vedanta doesn't tell you that we should neglect the body. Vedanta never tells you that we should have a negativistic attitude towards things of this world, including our own body. We need this body. In fact, that's a great statement in one of the most famous classical poems in Sanskrit language. The greatest literary poet of India, Sanskrit language, called Kalidasa, who lived the 2nd century AD. And he wrote several plays, dramas, which were translated into German even in the 18th century itself. Kalidasa, Abhijnana Shakuntala, Malavika Agnimitra, all the great, marvelous plays, dramas were, they in fact, they were translated into many European languages, even the beginning of 18th century. And great German writers like Goethe was a great admirer, a worshipper of Kalidasa. And his poems are much more well-known, famous. More like, they are not single poetical, classical poetical works like Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress or Milton's Paradise Lost, but of a different type. In that poem, there is an interesting scene where Shiva himself comes to test the devotion and the steadiness of a woman who was meditating on Shiva, the Lord. So Shiva takes the form of a young ascetic and comes to test the devotion of this woman ascetic who was sitting in a secluded place meditating on Shiva. And he says, Api kriyartham sulabham samit kusam jalanya visnana vidhikshamanite api swashaktya tapasi pravartasi sarira madhyam khalu dharma sadhanam. The last statement, sarira madhyam khalu dharma sadhanam, means this body is the most precious, most important, most significant instrument for practicing dharma. Whatever good things you do, whatever noble deeds you do, for all this, you need this human body. So, human body is something precious, something to be properly taken care of. But, again I said earlier, human body as human body is something not very significant. I already explained earlier. But when human body is considered to be an instrument for practicing, for attaining higher spiritual goals, it becomes a precious gift of God. But then people do not look upon the human body mechanism from that angle. So they look upon this body mechanism as a body mechanism, as something wonderful, something pure. So mistaking the impure for the pure, and then mistaking painful for the joyful. That's called anitya, asuchi, dukkha, anatmasu, nitya, suchi, sukha, atmakhyadihi, avidya. So what is really painful is mistaken, misunderstood, misinterpreted as something joyful. And that's also an important source of all the problems we are facing. So, most of the diseases and problems, at least many of them, are caused by activities which bring diseases and problems, but then with the wrong notion that those activities will bring joy. Apparently, it may bring joy, momentary pleasure. At the beginning, it may look like a cup of nectar, but it turns out to be a cup of poison in course of time. So people indulge in such activities, mistaking the painful to be the source of happiness and joy. So that's then atmakhyatihi. So anatmasu atmakhyatihi. So again, the non-self is mistaken to be the self. It's called sharida atma buddhi. People, if you ask anybody, normally those who are not interested in Vedanta would tell you, who are you? They may interpret themselves to be in terms of the human body mechanism. I am born in this particular place, son or daughter of this particular person, speaking this particular language, doing this profession, and so on. So all these identities are related to the body identity. So Patanjali says, all these problems are related to avidya. They are all different dimensions of ignorance. Ignorance here means not realizing the truth, but also mistaking the unreal, the untrue, to be the truth, the unreal for the real. According to Swami Vivekananda, yoga is all about bringing out the divine in human being. Yoga is a process of helping human beings in the evolution from the human dimension to the spiritual divine dimension. Normally, human beings are driven by impulses, instincts, and desires. Yoga helps us to deliberately practice, consciously practice certain values that help us to evolve from the human to the divine dimension. There is something other than this human body, mind and intellect in our system. That's our true identity, and that identity that we are Atman. For this Atman, this body is only an instrument, a vehicle, a medium on which it is reflected. But frequently we misinterpret this body to be the Atman, or rather the Atman to be this body. So that is the source of all problems according to Patanjali's system. Now, if you go deeper into Patanjali's system, you will understand this avidya or ignorance is also a kind of a vritti or a modification. In a way, it is a fundamental vritti, in the sense it is the most important vritti which indirectly gives birth to all other vrittis, all other dimensions of ignorance. We already discussed earlier in one context, you know, vrittaya panchataya pramana vibhariya vikalpa nidra smritayaha. We already discussed here. Five vrittis we already discussed in the earlier chapters. We discussed the five fundamental vrittis. Certain vrittis which are based valid knowledge. We see things, we perceive things, we get this knowledge from books, from reliable persons. So such information and the vrittis that are created by such information are valid, true. But then there are certain vrittis which is really not correct, not based on correct information. False knowledge, which really doesn't correspond to the real form. So according to Patanjali's system, this avidya itself is a kind of false knowledge, mistaken identity. And again, the other klesha like avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, and abhinivesha, all these are the products of avidya. The asmita, we are going to describe this. Asmita is egoism. Raga is extreme attraction to certain things. And dvesha is extreme aversion to certain things. Our mind is affected. And most of the problems are related to extreme liking for certain things, attraction. And its opposite, extreme aversion, hatred to certain things. Not only psychological problems, even physical problems are often related to extreme hatred, vindictiveness, revenge, thirst for revenge, desire for revenge, and also extreme liking, extreme attraction, and also fear and anxiety. All these are related to one fundamental cause. That cause is, I am this body. Nothing more. That's the idea behind. If we can interpret ourselves to be something higher than the physical body, psychophysical mechanism, then we can't have extreme liking for anything. At least we can never have extreme aversion to certain other things. And also, we won't feel the need to avoid certain things, abhinivesha or fear. So that's why Patanjali says in the 8 Sutra of Samadhipada is Viparyayo Mithyajnanam Adadruva Pradishtam. What is Viparyaya or false knowledge? Another understanding, another interpretation of avidya. It is nothing but false knowledge. It is not projection of something. An idea that you get in your mind, that you develop in your mind, really doesn't correspond to the reality. That is mithyajnanam adadruva. As I explained earlier, when we practice concentration with the help of tajjabas tadarthad bhavana, we already discussed this, either reading books, svadhyaya, or Ishwar Panidhana, and try to identify our mind with a sacred ideal through reading books, reciting sacred verses, through a feeling of self-surrender, all these problems and related problems will vanish. To give an example, why and how self-surrender miraculously transforms our activities. The classic example, there are many examples in the lives of mystics, Christian mystics in the medieval ages, many great devotees of Hindu Vedantic tradition, and you find many examples in the Russian Orthodox mystical tradition. But maybe one example that you find in the lives of Sri Ramakrishna, the teacher of Swami Vivekananda. It's a classic example. One of Sri Ramakrishna's greatest disciple, devotee, was a great playwright, a dramatist. He was a genius, more like Fyodor Dostoevsky. But he was fully drunk when he was writing his plays. Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote Brothers of Karamazov when he was fully drunk. He himself, they say, had not read his own work. Crime and Punishment, Poor Folk and Gambler, Idiot. He himself perhaps never read because he was fully drunk. So this playwright, his name was Girish Chandra Ghosh, maybe the most prominent playwright of Bengali theater. He was a genius, but a bohemian, perhaps leading a very loose life, but a prolific writer and dramatist. So he heard about Sri Ramakrishna, and he didn't understand why Sri Ramakrishna was so happy all the time. For Sri Ramakrishna, there was no problem, no anxiety. He was always in a blissful mood. He was always in perpetual communion with God, which is called God experience. Always immersed in samadhi, meditation, and contemplation. 24 hours, he was in communion with God. So, this man perhaps didn't understand how a saint, a spiritual person, could be so blissful all the time. And he came to Sri Ramakrishna. And he, Narik, Sri Ramakrishna understood his problems. He wanted some instructions. Now, Sri Ramakrishna knew that he was a drunkard. So first Sri Ramakrishna asked him, well, can you take the name of God in the morning and evening at least once? So Girish Chandra Ghosh was a genuine person. That was one aspect that saved his life. All drunkards do not become saints or mystics. But this man, who was a drunkard, he was not willing to say, yes, I will do it, fully knowing at the same time that he will not be able to do it. So when Sri Ramakrishna asked him to take the name of God in the morning and evening, he said, well, I can't be sure getting up, because a drunkard can never be sure when he gets up in the morning or when he goes to sleep in the evening. So he said he can't do that. You know, the highest spiritual person also live beyond time. There is no sunrise, no sunset. Drunkards also perhaps are not aware, they don't know when there is sunrise in the east and sunset in the west. So this man was true. So one great quality, mental quality, that became a threat through which Sri Ramakrishna transformed this drunkard and profligate into a great saint. So he understood he's a genuine person. He fully admitted that he can't give promise that he would take the name of God once in the morning after getting up and then while going to sleep. Well, Sri Ramakrishna, but at least once in life, that he said, no, he can't be sure. Then Sri Ramakrishna finally told him, well, then you give your full, complete responsibility for your spiritual growth, spiritual life. You turn over your power of attorney, spiritual life, over to me. This man didn't understand its full implications. After all, if somebody tells you he'll take over the full responsibility, we think, well, then you have no problem. He thought he can continue drinking again and again, and Sri Ramakrishna will take care of all the sins that you was going to commit. So he said, all right. He thought it was a very easy process. Nothing to pay, absolutely, totally inexpensive. There's no price for it, nothing to pay for it. And he himself, mentally, he fully surrendered. But as I said earlier, he had one genuine greatness. He was a man of total, complete integrity. When he said that he was going to do something, he was going to make all efforts to do it as he promised. Afterwards, it became physically and mentally impossible for him to do anything sinful. He stopped drinking. He couldn't do anything sinful. Because every time his mind tempted him, old vrittis and vasanas returned to him. Immediately, the mind told him, you have given your full responsibility to that great spiritual person living in a temple, and he gave you full protection, so should you do that? So practically, it became impossible for him to do anything sinful. Now, suppose this Girichandra Ghosh didn't have this great quality, complete integrity. He would not have been saved. He would not have become a saint. He would have told, well, I promise. Fully knowing that he was not going to practice it, he would never be saved. People pray, people practice Isvaram Pranidhana, self-surrender. But often it becomes a kind of a ritual, a license renewal ritual. They think they can continue doing that. You have heard of the story. A man thought in his mind, he promised, he took a vow, if I get $1,000, I shall give $500 to the nearby church as a donation for something. So when he was walking, he found a bundle of notes, and he found only 500 notes, $500. So he thought, God, you have taken your share already. So instead of giving $250, making a donation to the church, he assumed God was cleverer than he assumed. So he had already taken his share. So sometimes this duplicity is the main obstacle in this practice of self-surrender. So that's why Patanjali said, Ishvara Pranidhanatva, a complete resignation of self-surrender, if one could do in all sincerity, then even if you don't have any other spiritual qualities, you will be saved. Because the strong conviction that you have surrendered yourself to God, it will always flash in our mind, preventing us from doing anything sinful or wrong, and unconsciously directing us along the path of truth, spirituality, and morality. So, that's why Patanjali gave emphasis on this Ishvara Pranidhana ideal. No. We should remember, so again we should remember the old, what is called, Vritti Samskara Chakram, it's called. Whatever actions we do, these actions will produce a modification. That even after the action is over, action need not be physical action. It could be a flash of ideas in the mind, which also can produce a vritti or a modification. A thought, a word, which done consciously, will immediately create a ripple, an impact on the mind stuff, mental system, which is technically called modification of vritti in Sanskrit, in Patanjali system. This vritti, again, can act in a negative way or a positive way. It can take the path of raga, or it can take the path of dvesha. It can take the path of attraction or the path of aversion. It can create a strong dislike in you, and also it can create a strong liking for certain things. Extreme attraction and extreme aversion, both are equally strong obstacles in the path of yoga. So, action or karma produces vritti. Karma or action produces vritti or modification. Modification produces samskara. What is the difference between modification or vritti or samskara? Samskara is nothing but vritti with a strong orientation towards repeating that action. If the vritti is associated with an action which produced an unpleasant result, then the samskara will try to turn you away from repeating that action. And again, if the vritti is the effect of an action that produced pleasant result, then the samskara will force you to repeat that action. So raga and dvesha. So samskara is nothing but an action-oriented, repetition-oriented vritti. This is a cycle. Now this vritti again goes deeper. It becomes a vasana. A vasana is a tendency, strong character. People born with a strong vasana for music. I mean a strong natural tendency, skill and aptitude for certain activities, skills or certain tendencies. It becomes a vasana. So we have to remember, karma becomes vritti, vritti becomes samskara, samskara becomes vasana. Karma is action, action produces modification, an impulse. Modification becomes an action-oriented tendency. It again becomes a deep-rooted characteristic, a feature of our character, which is called vasana. This again becomes sankalpa, a strong will. I shall do this or I shall not do this. If the result of action is unpleasant, you take a strong sankalpa, a decision. I shall not do this again. If it produces a pleasant result, happy result, then I shall do it even if it is not necessary. This is how karma becomes vasana, and vasana becomes sankalpa. Sankalpa again becomes action, and action again vritti, samskara, vasana. So this vritti called vritti, samsara, chakram, Patanjali system. So all our actions, all our behavior are going on like this. Again, the fundamental cause for all this is avidya or ignorance. And that is true in Buddhist system also. Trishna or desire is the result of avidya, ignorance. So ignorance is the fundamental cause. And ignorance is nothing but our mistaking our true identity to be this body. And again, mistaking the impure, the non-eternal, the unhappy things to be purity itself, to be absolutely real, and to be a source of joy. So this is how our action produces. Now, yoga helps us to correctly understand what we are. So when we understand what we are, we elevate ourselves from the human to the divine dimension. That's the process. So now we'll continue in the next class. We'll have interaction. You can ask questions of a general nature and also from the topics that we discussed. Anything. Otherwise, we'll continue the classes. Yes, avidya is the explanation of the inexplicable, mysterious phenomenon. Knowingly, we do certain things. How do you explain this? In Vedanta. Knowingly. That's why I distinguished this process from a secular normal life. In normal life, suppose somebody tells you, you should not take that route, you should take another route. There's a traffic jam. You don't make the mistake again. But in real life, there are many things that we know, but that knowledge doesn't produce its expected result in our action. To produce that action, we have to do a lot of spiritual practices. That's why in the case of Girishchandra Ghosh, it did produce. So many biographers of Girishchandra Ghosh say that he had done a lot of spiritual practices in the past life. Due to some errors, he was born and he led a loose life. But then he was in need of a great teacher. And so just one instruction was enough for him to transform his life. It doesn't happen often. When our mental system is ready, then a single instruction will be enough to bring about a transformation. When the iron is hot, one blow can bring about a change. So it doesn't always happen. So this inexplicable phenomenon is called avidya in Vedanta. But of course, in Patanjali system, it is just a false, wrong cognition. We are the Purusha, but we forget that reality and we interpret ourselves to be an evolute of Prakriti, which is devoid of consciousness. So I'm trying to interpret many of these yogic ideas from Yoga Sutras in the light of Vedanta to make it much more meaningful and relevant to our times. So once you recognize this is avidya, then you'll be able to get out of it. We realized we were sleeping only when we wake up. When we are asleep, we don't realize, we don't understand we are asleep. So this mysterious phenomenon is explained in Vedanta to be the indescribable power, entity called avidya. It is real so long as we are within its realm. You understand, it is really unreal when we come out of it. That's how we can explain the transformation of great saints and sages. That's how it is. Great association with great spiritual personalities, or sometimes depending upon our own past karmas, reading of a great book, listening to great idea can also have an effect. It had happened to many. It is difficult to explain. There's no general rule because Vedanta and Yoga will tell you the 8 billion people inhabiting this planet belong to 8 billion characteristics, 8 billion levels of spiritual evolution. This idea behind. There are 8 billion mirrors on which the sun reflects, but the quality of reflection depends upon the clarity of the mirror. If the mirror is clean, you become a Buddha. If there is dust, and to that extent, the Atman reflects so much less. So every spiritual practice, when we listen to spiritual talks, meditation, prayer, reading books, discussion, all these are attempts to clean up this mirror. You take a wet towel and clean it up. So every time we enrich our mind with the spiritual thought current, which could be done in many, so many ways, will be helpful to clean up this mirror. Prayer is a great help. Reading scriptures is a great help in any religious tradition, in any spiritual tradition, depending upon your taste and temperament. That's the idea. If it brings serenity and peace to you, then that is genuine. See, in the case of Sri Girishchandra Ghosh, many of his plays were related to great spiritual personalities, Prahlada, great devotees, mythological figures. But he himself was writing all these plays. He was running a theater, but he never himself became a saint before he met Sri Ramakrishna. So that's how it works. But his mind was more or less ready. It must have been torn between two conflicting thought currents. It happens. On the one hand, when he was writing those wonderful plays, his mind must have gone to a higher level. It transported itself into a spiritual level. But again, the call of the flesh brought him down and made him lead a loose life. So when he came in contact with a great spiritual person, there is the beginning of new life. That's the idea. The basic difference between Western psychology and yoga is yoga psychology explains all these in the light of actions and tendencies and characteristics accumulated over innumerable past lives. Modern psychology confines its analysis to the present life, that's all. Modern psychology doesn't clearly distinguish between vritti and samskara. Everything is vritti. Yes. Vritti should become samskara. Then only it becomes action-oriented. A child in a classroom, if the child reacts in a particular manner towards a lesson or towards some game, that child has got a samskara and shows a tendency to do certain things or not to do certain things. That is due to the particular samskara, which again related to some vrittis, which again are related to some past experiences like that. Very often the transformations do not take place because we create an outer layer, which is a layer, there's an outer cover that covers our real mind. Different layers, different outer shells. So in diplomatic profession, you are specially trained for it. But in real life, we artificially create different layers. But for Girishchandra Ghosh, there's only one layer. That's why prayers and spiritual practices sometimes fail to produce the desired effects. But they will produce results, but maybe not as quickly as in the case of spiritual seekers who are very genuine. Sometimes they give an example. We all believe in God. We all believe in spirituality. And we all believe it is now 8:30. There are two types of beliefs. I think it's 8:30. Fine. We are no doubt about it. Do we believe in God or spiritual values with the same genuineness with which we believe it's 8:30 now? So different levels of belief. That's why Patanjali says, through the practice of this self-surrender in any religious tradition, one can break through, remove all these outer layers, becomes real practice. Doubt, yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah.
But without somebody to do that, you know, from a Western perspective, we're trained to be skeptical.
Yeah, yes. I know. So, for Vivekananda, he was a young agnostic student who did not believe in God or Advaita. That experience was enough. Sri Ramakrishna in later years made a statement. Vivekananda had practiced meditation and had reached a very high level of spiritual perfection through meditation in his previous life. So for him, the single touch brought about the transformation. But the same level of transformation did not take place in the lives of innumerable devotees, spiritual seekers who came to Sri Ramakrishna. So Professor Hasty was teaching Wordsworth's excursion, thought that Sri Ramakrishna Samadhi was a kind of trance, which he explained when he was teaching Wordsworth's poem there. Perhaps he didn't understand Sri Ramakrishna's experience as a communion with God, but he understood as some kind of a transcendental higher experience with words of Insub may have, great mystical poets may have. So you find the experience of the result, the impact may vary from person to person depending upon their fitness, spiritual fitness. But they all will get some beneficial result, but may not be identical. After all, we all read, we all listen to great spiritual ideas, but the effects may vary depending upon our own fitness, the way we approach it. So, in Vedanta, there are two fundamental streams of thought which explain this phenomenon. Of course, in Sanskrit, it's called Prasankhyanavada. The other is called Sabda Parokshavada. According to one school, you should listen, you should read great spiritual books, you should assimilate, and you should contemplate on them. Then you should practice higher disciplines like discerning mind, what is real, and you should adhere to the real, and you should reject the unreal, and then you should have a strong desire for liberation. Then you should try. You should practice self-control, total renunciation. All this gradually you will practice, and then you will reach liberation. This is one view. It doesn't happen immediately. You read a book, it doesn't happen. You listen to a great spiritual truth being expounded, it doesn't happen. We may go back to our home, we may go to a library, take up a book, start reading again and again continue listening to those ideas, we may discuss. And gradually, it becomes some kind of an experience. Maybe not in this life, in the next life. That's what Vedanta says. According to the other school, for those who are highly deserving spiritual seekers, those who have reached a very high level of spiritual fitness, one, if they listen to a great spiritual idea once, that's enough. It is called Shabda Aparokshavad. Immediately, it will become an experience to you. So, in the Vedantic text, this idea is being explained with the help of an analogy, a parable. A person lost something very precious. Let us say, suppose you lose your passport or identity card, driver's license, anything. And you are going in search of it. Because it's of vital importance that you should regain it. And as you walk in the street, if it is lying on the street, you won't make a mistake. You'll immediately take it. So the moment you see it, you take it with you, put it in your pocket. But suppose you are going in search of something. You are not looking for anything. You are going for some other things. And in the course of your travel, you're walking in the street, you come across something which you are not seeking actually. Let us say $20 bill lying there. You may not be very sure they should take it up, pick it up or not. You may not do that. If something is lying there, which you are not looking for, you may hesitate to take it. You may have been walking there, you are lost, but you are not sure that it was your money or not. You will hesitate. You are not sure. Even if you get it, or if it is a pencil or a pen, you won't pay much attention to it. But in the case of identity card, when you are looking for it, you are going in search of it because you have lost it. It's something very important for you. When you go in search of it, your whole mind is focused on that. All other vrittis are pushed back away from your mind. There is no other thought in your mind except your whole mind takes the form of that driver's license. You are not thinking of anything else and you walk in the street going in search of it, the road by which you traveled earlier. And when you find it lying there, you take it. No doubts. So highly spiritual persons, those who are reached a very high level of spiritual fitness, when they listen once, it becomes obvious to them. They are like a person who has lost his driver's license, who goes in search of it, and he finds it lying there in the street, he takes it. There is no hesitation. He won't waste 1 second thinking whether it is his or not, because whole mind was on that. The moment he sees that, he recognizes as his identity card.
So I would assume that's related to our
yeah. Because the whole mind is fully focused. All other thought currents, all other ideas are completely removed from the mind. The mind is fully focused on this particular thing. The mind itself, according to a yoga, whatever your mind is fully concentrated on, your mind takes that form visually. Suppose you are thinking of one picture, then your mind itself, chittam, it's called mind stuff. Chittam, that is called, you know, chittam takes that particular vritti. That is a vritti sarupyam itaratra. In the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, beginning of Samadhipada says, when we have not reached the yoga level, what happens? Whatever things present before us, our mind takes that particular form, vritti sarupyam. That mind itself takes the form of a vritti, which is similar to that visual object that you are seeing. So when you are looking, you are going in search of your identity card, whole mind takes the form of that piece of paper. So when you see it lying there, you no hesitation. So highly gifted spiritual seekers, for them, little exposure is enough. Little instruction is enough. Very often, reading a book from a library may be the beginning of a new chapter in their life. Listening to an idea. For others, you go on hitting it because the iron is cold. Nothing happens. The hammer may get broken, but the iron doesn't undergo any transformation. But it will go on. Some little impact will be there. Maybe after some time, some transformation will come. So that's why Vedanta approaches this phenomenon that you refer to from two angles. One angle, you listen, you contemplate, you think, gradually you practice, and then you reach a very high level of fitness, and then it becomes an experience to you. That's why after listening to Vedantic lectures, reading books for a long time, when you go back to the earlier lessons, you will see greater meaning, greater significance on the fundamental lessons that you may have read 10 years back. Now they reveal much more, their meaning much more, and much more effectively, forcefully. So that's how it happens. We evolve, and according to our evolution, we are benefited. In the case of Vivekananda, he was a man of the highest level of fitness, so it was enough for him. No, we can work. Meditation is one way. Reading is one way. Sports, swadhyaya, listening to those ideas, discussing those ideas, and keeping the mind always brooding over those ideas is also a great help, because that slowly takes us mentally towards that idea. Anything, any visual, audio, any experience can be turned into a spiritual tool to enrich the mind, to reach a higher level of fitness. Okay. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.